Welcome to the Forgettable Reads Podcast, a no-nonsense sleepcast for the rest of us. No creepy whispering, no bad spa music, no sleepy monotone. Just sincere reads of boring, bland material for all your verbal white noise needs. And now your host, Lauren Good.
Good evening, my friends, and welcome to episode 18. In the last episode, we rambled on about the various ways we can travel and find happy, meaningful places, whether figuratively or imaginatively. And as I sat pondering what last remaining themes to cover about our What New Normal, and specifically for tonight's episode, I literally kept thinking, I don't know. There's so much to unpack in this idea of what a new normal has brought with it that trying to choose a single topic feels like asking, what do you want for dinner when you're at a restaurant that has a 40-page menu? Yes, of course, there's soup, there's salad, there are entrees with six types of protein, desserts, sides, and, well, shucks, honey, I just don't know. As soon as I caught myself saying, I don't know, it reminded me of a funny story. Well, two, actually. Once upon a time, in a land far away and a long time ago, I worked with someone whom we'll call Biffy, for the sake of anonymity, which, by the way, I tried very, very hard to find another word for this sentence, as anonymity is like one of my least favorite words to have to voice into a microphone cleanly, clearly, and conversationally. Of course, now I'm rethinking it. I guess I could have said, out of respect for both this person and their contributions, I'm going to give them an alias, as I really do actually appreciate them. Yeah, whatever, whichever. Whatever words float your sleeping boat. The recovering perfectionist moves on. So when Biffy and I used to work together, we had all kinds of communication problems. I would try to explain something I was working on or why I was doing something, and they would instantly interject, but I needed to do it a different way, or I needed a different reason to do what I was doing. For example, there was an exercise. It was an exercise I was given to do in the morning to help me get my energy up. It's this whole priming exercise that comes up from a fairly famous life coach celebrity, so you can YouTube it if you want. But after trying it for several months, I found it wasn't quite working as intended for me. And so I was going to tweak it to better suit my life and my needs. So Biffy asked why it wasn't working. I said, it seems like a great get you pumped up for the day kind of ritual if you're in sales or you really need to tap into your type A part of your personality, but I'm an actor and I have quite a diverse client group. It generally just makes me sound a little too amped up, like I've had too much caffeine. And I've even noticed that clients are starting to ask me for more revisions, and they're all linked to the fact that I'm going too fast, either in my pacing or, you know, by missing words. So you're too rigid. You're unable to change your energy after performing the ritual, says Biffy. No, I like to spend time in meditation and then journal my answers to some of the power questions, like, what are you grateful? So you'd like to wallow in a low energy state, they interject. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if my first script is about something that requires a delicate touch and a more introspective focus, I want to be there for it just as much as if my first script requires level 10 enthusiasm. My point is, the aim of this exercise, as written, is to get primed and pumped. I mean, it's literally in the name. It's called priming. And what my aim is to get open, receptive, and ready. So it sounds like you don't understand the exercise. Now, by this point in the conversation, I am getting fairly frustrated. And I'm feeling even more tension internally because I'm really not sure why I'm continuing to explain or defending something that not only do I understand it, but when I came into the conversation, I was actually really happy and proud about this. I'm taking something and I'm learning how to make it my own. This had been one of my goals at the time. So in the acting world, we would call this beat shift disappointed expectations from the moment before. So I said, look, it's like when you find a new cookbook, the first time you make a recipe, you follow it dutifully to the letter. Then when you taste it, you think, well, maybe it could use less salt. Maybe it would be better if you swapped out the dill for the parsley and definitely add the spinach later so it stays greener and crunchier. You take that recipe after you've made it the way the author intended and you make it your own. I'm ready to adapt this exercise to have the right blend to support me in the ways that I need it to in my own mornings. So you don't like following other people's instructions. Is that what you're saying? Oh, I don't know, Biffy. Why don't you tell me what I mean by what I'm saying? So to make a long story somewhat shorter, because it is a lot of exposition, we then had a round of emails, of feedback about this conversation where I tried to express what I needed. And about 4 or 5 emails in, I just really got the impression that instead of having conversations and collaboration, that Biffy and I were locked into a battle for who was going to get the last word. I terminated my working partnership with them as a client and instead referred them to teach webinars and to coach other people whom I thought they would be a better fit with, which also allowed me the freedom to find someone I felt more compatible with. And I thought that would be a more productive use of our time together, a win-win, as Stephen Covey would call it. So during one webinar, Biffy decided to use some example clients to illustrate major points to the attendees about how important it is to stick to your plans about achieving goals. So the first funny part of this very long story is that I was one of the examples. Even though I was the one who referred Biffy for this job, I was being used as a beware example. I honestly, at the time, I couldn't believe it. For like a whole 2 milliseconds, I was just dumbstruck. And then after those 2 milliseconds were over, I did. I believed it. So what Biffy told the panel was, so this client kept saying, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know, like it was their personal mantra. And I did. I must have said, I don't know, to Biffy probably 100 times in our time together. Biffy was not lying. I don't know what I don't know. And when someone constantly expresses your thoughts for you in a conversation or asks you to answer a deep, probing question that philosophers have spent an entire life dedicated to reflecting on, but they want you to give it in like 3 words or make it fit on a t-shirt or make a hashtag out of it, you know, sometimes saying, I don't know, is the only non-aggressive way to get out of it. I mean, the other options are you steamroll over them and just keep talking, you go down rabbit holes, or you just constantly change the subject. I truly didn't know. And that's what makes it funny. So the second part of the story that makes it funny, and this is the part I wanted to get to once all the exposition was in, is that months later, I was reviewing my journal to set the next quarter's intentions, goals, plans, processes, rituals, so on. And I came across this entry about Biffy and the webinar and how I was the I don't know mantra client, how irritated and frustrated I was, how I finally decided to like move on and not work with Biffy anymore. And at the exact moment that I was reading this entry about being the I don't know client, a song by Karma Fields that I had never heard, even though YouTube music shuffles the same music on my playlist like a lot. It was the first time I heard it and it came on in the speaker. Would you like to hear the lyrics? Now, don't worry, I'm not going to sing them. I'm just going to read them. So it starts out, I'm just trying to figure myself out, trying to pick up somehow, parts of me, pieces of memories. Feels like everything's moving. I don't know where it's going. Then there's a really, really long bridge that I will spare you of hearing all of it, but it's something like, I'm just trying to figure myself out, trying to figure myself out. And then the chorus hits. This is what really got my attention. The chorus goes like this. I don't know. 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 I'm just trying to figure myself out. After the initial shock of having my journal reading literally being serenaded second by second by YouTube music, once that shock had worn off, I could not stop smiling. Here was Biffy's former I don't know mantra client putting together a plan, listening to what was at the time what I called the I don't know song. I literally had to just go look it up to find out what it actually was. I mean, I'm telling you, my friends, life is stranger than fiction sometimes. But I do know that thanks to Biffy, I now have a new morning ritual, which I love. And sometimes before I write and perform it, I play the I don't know song and I dance and I laugh. Which I guess brings me to what the theme of tonight's episode is about, both the inner reflection work we do to figure ourselves out and in the process, what we shed, which is not working, so that we can focus on what is. I don't think I'm alone in the pandemic bringing that process around. You know, I've heard so many stories about what the process did and how it put a spotlight into different relationships, you know, romantic relationships, roommate relationships, relationships with God or, you know, the divine spirit, relationships with self, with work teams, with just life in general. It's like sitting in a pot of water that gradually gets warmer. It's sometimes hard to tell the effect that that process had on any of us until we have hindsight to do it later. So for my part, the positive side of that transformation is that saying no and starting to set boundaries has gotten a little bit easier. So in addition to being a recovering perfectionist and people pleaser, see earlier note about anonymity and respect, I've also been loyal, like so loyal to a ride or die level of fault. And, you know, Biffy and I had arguments about whether loyalty is a virtue or not. What I do know is it's a wonderful intention. It is a wonderful intention to never want to give up on anyone or anything. But there's also a question that goes along with every decision we make in life. And I think for the first time in my adult life, I was starting to understand it. I am starting to understand it. That question is, at what cost? So I will gladly accept the cost of hot, ripped, bruised, dirty hands and bruises from trapeze in order to continue doing it. I will gladly accept the cost of feeling really sleepy in the morning from spending time with loved ones, having dinner, playing games, yik-yakking until way past our bedtimes. I will accept the cost of inconvenience to stop and help someone who asks or who just obviously could use some help. I will gladly accept the awkwardness that's involved in having hard but necessary conversations. I will gladly accept the immense soreness that sometimes comes from exercise. Not so gladly, but I will accept the cost from bad bowel movements from spicy food and so on and so on. I could probably brainstorm about 25 more, but we don't need to go there. But the cost of my mental and emotional health is no longer a cost I'm willing to pay by either not setting boundaries or maintaining boundaries. I started with all this, you know, no and setting boundaries. I guess the flip side, the more empowering way to express this is that it's like learning. We get to choose whom and what we put our time, energy, and resources into. And that doesn't mean, like, this isn't even a line of, you know, return on investment. This is not about tit for tat. I gave you this, so you must give me that. Or, you know, I did this much effort for this thing, and now I expect to see yada-da-yada-da-yada-da as a result. It's not like that. But it's like, so if you're giving your time, your energy, your resources, you're giving you. Does what you're doing bring you any joy? Does it bring you joy? Or is it draining you and creating resentment? Do you want to continue giving it as much of yourself as you have in the past? And that's where I think in this new normal, many of us have been surprised to find that for certain things, people, relationships, habits, what have you, there were some of those that we answered no to that question. No, I don't want to continue giving it as much of myself as I have in the past. Now, to take it to a really light example, I can't even tell you how many people I personally know who decided to say no to continuing living in the same state that they did before the pandemic hit. They sold, packed up, and got out of Dodge like they were running from the law. It's like this big mass exodus of a cosmic no. And I think every big cosmic no probably starts from a seed of I don't know. I'm just trying to figure it out. So before we move on to tonight's reading, I would like to take a minute to dedicate this episode to Biffy. I know Biffy was the butt of the funny story joke, but really the point of the story was about that moment with the music. So thank you, Biffy. I dedicate this episode to you for teaching me so much that I never knew before. I certainly do not regret parting ways one little bit, but neither do I regret the time that we spent forging steel together. I am grateful as always and hope you have a wonderful, wonderful life. So, for tonight's reading, we'll turn one more time to Deepak Chopra and then get a second opinion from ChatGPT. Rest well, my friends. I use my memories, I don't let my memories use me. By Deepak Chopra, MD, FACP, FRCP. It would surprise people to learn that the sentiment quoted above, I use my memories, I don't let my memories use me, is a telltale sign of higher consciousness. In fact, any step in the direction of personal evolution loosens the grip that memory has on us. If you want to know what blocks you from experiencing bliss, joy, fulfillment, love, and creativity, the chief culprit is memory. The reason is that the story you and everyone else are living right now is a tangled web of memories. Memory gave you your bad habits, fears, old hurts, remembered humiliation, rejection, and lack of love. Each old experience leaves an imprint if it is strong enough, and as a result, you aren't really living in the present. Memory is using you, deciding for you, and influencing you in every moment. Some memories, such as remembering how to do your job at work, or playing tennis, or riding a bicycle, are not using you. You are using them, calling upon a set of skills you have accumulated over time. The kind of memory that is damaging is different. It is emotional memory, which works like a cat sitting on a hot stove. As Mark Twain famously observed, once a cat has sat on a hot stove, it won't sit on any stove, hot or cold. In the same way, the experiences we avoid, feel threatening before we attempt them because memory tells us that we might be hurt. When enough of these memories mount up, your state of awareness is hemmed in by fear, avoidance, caution, and the anticipation of worst-case scenarios. Author Huxley called this the reducing valve that squeezes the infinite possibilities of consciousness into a mere trickle. Memories come at us from all directions, which is the source of the tangled web they form. Where is there an escape route? In the yoga tradition of India, the problem isn't memory per se, but the residue of impressions left by strong memories attached to emotions. There are any number of remedies to reduce these impressions, known in Sanskrit as samskaras. The list is long and diverse. Nothing on it is mystical or esoteric. Regular meditation. Doing yoga. Being aware of stress and addressing it instead of enduring it. Loving relationships, self-esteem, psychotherapy, maintaining a simple state of awareness without strong opinions and reactions, stopping negative behavior as soon as you notice it in yourself, encouraging positive responses, discouraging negative ones in yourself, avoiding actions you know to be wrong, acting on your highest, best impulses when your reaction to a situation is mixed. For example, tolerating rather than blaming, accepting rather than resisting, encouragement instead of indifference. Finding the level of deeper wisdom inside yourself. None of these steps is surprising, although we often fail to follow them. But the most important is the last, finding your deeper wisdom. Since life brings the bitter with the sweet, you cannot avoid accumulating a mix of good and bad memories, which is why people shrug their shoulders and let their memories have free rein in the mind. Pushing out or denying the negative ones is a common tactic, which leaves room for pleasant memories. But deeper wisdom offers another answer. It concerns reality versus illusion. The story you are living right now isn't the only thing that is the product of memory. The world itself, even the cosmos, is a tangled web of sight, sound, texture, taste, and smell. These are the qualities of reality as amassed in memory. To recognize anything around you, whether a table, a sunset, an old friend, the star-spangled banner, or the Bhagavad Gita, you are resorting to memory. To recognize literally means to cognize or know again. Therefore, you are caught in a feedback loop controlled by the past. Whatever you perceive is a repeat performance. To a yogi, the tangled web of existence isn't formed by what the physicists mean by entanglement, the notion that all objects are ultimately enmeshed in the same quantum field. Yoga points to entangled sensations, thoughts, feelings, and images in the mind, often referred to as qualia, the Latin for inequality, like sight or sound. The only escape from this entanglement of qualia is to follow the New Testament injunction to be in the world, but not of it. What this means is a pattern of participation. You participate with detachment. No one would know the difference seeing you from the outside. Normal life in the outer world proceeds normally, but you no longer carry any personal baggage. This state doesn't immediately sound appealing, just as the word detachment doesn't sound appealing at first glance. Only experience tells the tale. Someone who is experiencing dim sight or hearing loss can adapt to the point of hardly noticing the problem. But we all know people who exclaim with delight when their cataracts are removed or a hearing aid is installed. Similarly, the burden of memory, like the tangled web that embeds us, can pass notice until it is removed. This is the experience you can get by finding your deep wisdom. To put in a word, when you remove your illusions, what remains must be real. A fundamental point in yoga is that reality is blissful. It is not innately painful or neutral. Those experiences are the byproduct of memory using us instead of the other way around. The path to finding your deep wisdom isn't a secret. The traditions of sages, seers, and teachers exist in every culture. You only have to avail yourself. The first step, as always, is to find a vision of reality that entices you to undergo change. The most profound vision, or one of them, is contained in the sentiment we began with. I use my memories. I don't let my memories use me. Having unpacked the profound implications of that sentence, you can walk the path of reality instead of illusion. Deepak Chopra, MD, FACP, FRCP, founder of the Chopra Foundation, a nonprofit entity for research on well-being and humanitarianism, and Chopra Global, a whole health company at the intersection of science and spirituality, is a world-renowned pioneer in integrative medicine and personal transformation. Chopra is a clinical professor of family medicine and public health at the University of California, San Diego, and serves as a senior scientist with Gallup Organization. He is the author of over 90 books translated into over 43 languages, including numerous New York Times bestsellers. His 91st book, Total Meditation, Practices in Living the Awakened Life, explores and reinterprets the physical, mental, emotional, relational, and spiritual benefits that the practice of meditation can bring. For the last 30 years, Chopra has been at the forefront of the meditation revolution. His latest book, Living in the Light, was co-authored with Sarah Platt Finger. Time magazine describes Dr. Chopra as one of the top 100 heroes and icons of the century. www.deepakchopra.com. All right, ChatGPT. So, do we use our memories, or do our memories use us? The relationship between humans and their memories is complex and multifaceted. It's not a matter of one using the other, but rather a dynamic interaction between the two. Here's a perspective on this. One, we use our memories. Memories are a fundamental part of human cognition and play a crucial role in our daily lives. We rely on our memories to learn from past experiences, make decisions, solve problems, and plan for the future. Memories serve as a mental database, and we access to navigate the world, recall information, and build upon our knowledge. Two, our memories use us. Memories can also influence our thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. Sometimes, memories can resurface without our deliberate control, leading to involuntary recollections, emotions, or reactions. Traumatic or vivid memories can impact our mental and emotional well-being, sometimes leading to conditions like post-traumatic stress disorder, also called PTSD. So it's not a one-sided relationship. We actively use our memories for various cognitive processes, but memories can also exert an influence on us, especially in situations where they are emotionally charged or intrusive. It is important to note that a memory is a complex and intricate aspect of human psychology, and researchers continue to explore the mechanisms and dynamics of memory to better understand its role in our lives. So if you had to take those ideas, ChatGPT, and write your own version of an article for LinkedIn, what would it say? The Dance of Memories, How We Use Them and How They Use Us. Introduction. Memory is an intricate and fascinating aspect of human cognition. It shapes our experiences, guides our decisions, and allows us to learn from the past. But is it we who use our memories, or do our memories use us? In this article, we will explore the dynamic relationship between humans and their memories, shedding light on the intriguing interplay between the two. The use of memories. Memories are the cornerstone of our cognitive abilities. They serve as a mental repository, storing information about our past experiences, knowledge, and skills. We actively use our memories for various purposes. Purpose 1, learning and adaptation. Memories are essential for learning from our experiences. When we encounter a situation, our brain accesses relevant memories to help us make informed decisions and adapt to new challenges. 2, problem solving. Memory enables us to draw on our past solutions to similar problems. We use our memories to find effective strategies and avoid repeating past mistakes. 3, planning for the future. Our ability to plan and set goals relies on memory. We use memories of past achievements and failures to shape our future endeavors. 4, communication. Language and communication heavily depend on memory. We use our memory of words, grammar, and context to express ourselves and understand others. The influence of memories. While we actively employ our memories, memories can also have a significant impact on us. Memories can resurface without our control, influencing our thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. 1, involuntary recollections. Sometimes memories surface spontaneously, triggered by sensory cues or associations. These involuntary recollections can bring back vivid emotions and experiences. 2, emotional impact. Memories, especially those tied to traumatic events, can profoundly affect our mental and emotional well-being. Traumatic memories may lead to conditions like PTSD, where our memories seem to use us by intruding into our daily lives. 3, bias and perception. Our memories can shape our perceptions and judgments. Cognitive biases, such as confirmation bias and availability heuristic, are examples of how memories can influence our decision-making process. Conclusion. In the intricate dance between humans and their memories, there is no clear answer to whether we use our memories or if our memories use us. It's a symbiotic relationship where we actively employ memories for cognitive processes while being influenced by them in return. Understanding this dynamic relationship is essential for personal growth, decision-making, and mental well-being. By harnessing the power of memories consciously and addressing the impact of intrusive or negative memories, we can navigate our lives with greater awareness and resilience. In the end, it's not a matter of dominance, but coexistence. Our memories are an integral part of who we are, shaping our past, present, and future in ways both intentional and unexpected. Embracing this complexity allows us to make the most of our memories while ensuring they don't hold us hostage in the labyrinth of our minds. Thank you so much, ChatGPT. I will tell you, Deepak Chopra also wrote an article on LinkedIn on this topic. Here it is, if you'd care to read it. And then I'd like to ask you a question. What are your thoughts and insights on this article? Deepak Chopra's article titled, "I Use My Memories, I Don't Let My Memories Use Me," offers a profound exploration of the relationship between memory, consciousness, and personal evaluation. In this article, Chopra presents a perspective on how our memories can either empower us or hold us back, ultimately affecting our state of awareness and well-being. Key points from the article. 1, higher consciousness and memory. Chopra suggests that the sentiment of actively using one's memories rather than being controlled by them is a sign of higher consciousness. He asserts that moving towards personal evolution diminishes the grip that memory has on our lives. 2, the role of emotional memory. Chopra highlights that it's not all memories that influence us, but in particular, emotional memories. These memories are associated with strong emotions and can shape our behaviors and reactions in the present. 3, the yoga tradition. The article references the yoga tradition in India, emphasizing that the problem isn't memory itself, but the impressions left by strong emotional memories known as samskaras in Sanskrit. These impressions can be reduced through various practices, including meditation, yoga, and self-awareness. 4, detachment and deep wisdom. Chopra explores the idea of detachment as a means to break free from the entanglement of qualia or sensory experiences in the mind. He suggests that by participating in the world with detachment, one can experience reality without being controlled by memory, ultimately revealing a blissful reality beneath the illusions. 5, reality as blissful. The article suggests that reality itself is inherently blissful, and experiences of pain or neutrality are the result of memory using us, rather than us using memory. Removing illusions can reveal the true nature of reality. 6, the path to deep wisdom. Chopra encourages readers to seek wisdom from various cultural traditions and to find a vision of reality that inspires personal change. The article concludes by emphasizing the importance of actively using one's memories as a step towards walking the path of reality instead of illusion. Chopra's article offers a thought-provoking perspective on the role of memory in shaping our lives and the potential for personal growth and transformation by consciously using memories rather than being controlled by them. It encourages readers to explore practices that can lead to a deeper understanding of reality and a more blissful existence. Thank you, ChatGPT, for such a thorough and insightful response. What reasons would someone have to disagree with Dr. Chopra's article? While Deepak Chopra's article presents a thought-provoking perspective on the relationship between memory, consciousness, and personal evolution, there are several reasons why someone might disagree with its assertions. Here are some potential points of contention. 1. Scientific validity. Some individuals may argue that Chopra's claim lacks empirical evidence and scientific rigor. The article discusses concepts like emotional memory, detachment, and the blissful nature of reality, which may not align with current scientific understanding of memory and consciousness. 2. Skepticism about detachment. The idea of detachment from sensory experiences and memories may be met with skepticism. Critics might argue that complete detachment from one's emotions and memories could lead to emotional numbness or disconnection from reality, rather than a desired state of higher consciousness. 3. Cultural and philosophical variability. Different cultures and philosophical traditions have diverse views on memory, consciousness, and reality. Some may argue that Chopra's perspective is grounded in a particular worldview, for example, Eastern philosophy, and may not be universally applicable or accepted. 4. Role of negative memories. While the article emphasizes the need to move away from negative memories, some individuals might contend that negative memories can also be valuable. They can serve as lessons, sources of resilience, and catalysts for personal growth and self-improvement. 5. Lack of practical guidance. Critics might argue that the article provides philosophical insights but lacks practical guidance on how to implement the suggested practices effectively. Readers may seek more concrete steps and strategies for addressing memory-related challenges. 6. Alternative perspectives. There are various psychological and philosophical perspectives on memory and consciousness. Some people may prefer alternative explanations and approaches that do not necessarily prioritize detachment or a blissful nature of reality. 7. Personal beliefs. Disagreement can also arise from personal beliefs and worldviews. People who have contrasting beliefs about the nature of consciousness, the role of emotions, or the significance of memory may find Chopra's article incompatible with their views. 8. Critique of commercial interests. Deepak Chopra is a well-known author and speaker in the field of self-help and spirituality, and some individuals may perceive his writings as motivated by commercial interests. This perception might lead to skepticism about the sincerity of the ideas presented in the article. It's important to recognize that philosophical and spiritual discussions often involve diverse viewpoints, and disagreements are natural. Readers should critically evaluate such articles and consider their own perspectives, beliefs, and experiences when engaging with the ideas presented. Constructive debate and discussion can lead to a deeper understanding of these complex topics. Thank you so much, ChatGPT. It's always a pleasure having these conversations.